The name of my story is One Shoe. We Goheens have a sort of understood mission statement, what we take with us, always, no matter what. It's relatively simple, and it goes something like this. You are loved. Be flexible. Respect for all, especially you. Laugh at everything, no matter how much it sucks. And most importantly, know where your shoes are at all times. Listen, with a household consisting of 2 adults, 6 children, and 2 dogs, keeping track of approximately 129 shoes can be a daunting task. And yes, I did a quick count, and sadly there's a missing shoe or three in our house. The good news for me is that Andre got the kids ready this morning, and the shoe that was missing, I am certain, is the most important in our oldest daughter, Indy's, life. Okay, so you know that shoes overwhelm me, and the truth be told, I don't generally wear them. What I really want to talk to you about today is the chaotic process through which our mission statement was developed and refined. At the time my story takes place, we're living on Hill Air Force Base in Utah. We only have 4 kids. Baby Isaiah is asleep. I'm reading a bedtime story to Indy. The streetlights are on, so Josh and Oscar are in the house. Andre's out of town in Colorado learning how to aim higher. It's a warm summertime dusk with its usual bright red sunset over the Great Salt Lake. Honestly, the sunsets are the best part about living in Utah. We have a view from the right of our back porch of the Salt Lake and the sunset, and to the left, we have a view of the tank farm. If this tank farm thing sounds ominous, it is. Imagine a 1-acre lot with multiple 2-story jet fuel tanks conveniently painted tan as if they will blend into the desert unnoticed. For reasons only my government can or cannot explain, our neighborhood is backed by the tank farm. Our family is well settled in for the night when things begin to go terribly wrong. There's an explosion, and the lights in the house become incredibly bright. Dim, bright again, another explosion, and everything is dark. My children are crying. Another explosion and white ozone smoke hangs over the neighborhood streets. Bright white fire and sparks shoot into the air. And did I mention that Andre is out of town and any good Air Force wife in her right mind is just a little bit afraid of terrorist attacks? The base siren starts blazing. Fire trucks and military police are racing up and down the streets. In the 3 to 5 minutes this is happening, it's hard to decide where to be. I honestly just don't know what the hell is going on, and the world's not feeling safe for me or my dear ones. When the neighbor runs in and tells me to get out, the tank farm is on fire. I went from my usual cool in a crisis to utter panic. I start loading kids into the van and realize, like all good West Virginians, none of us have on shoes. I run back into the dark house and start grabbing things vital for our existence. I form a quick list of what's important. Dogs, the kids' loveys, asthma medications, diapers, wipes, and shoes. Apparently, in my panic, I've lost the ability to carry more than one thing at a time, and I'm racing back and forth to the van. All the kids are following me in tow like panicked little ducklings. Each time I stop and take a second to think, all the kids run into me and we become a 5-car pileup. I take a deep breath. All which is critical to the Goheens' existence is in the van. Sleeping baby with stuffed dog? Check. Medications? Check. Diaper wipes and diapers? Check. All kids have on footwear? Check. I feel like I'm missing something and find that I am both literally and figuratively spinning in circles. I look down and I realize I have on only one shoe. I continue to repeat the process of spinning, stopping, kids piling up, in a hectic attempt to find the shoe. What would any rational person do in this situation? I called Andre in Colorado to see if he knew where the shoe was. I frantically relayed the story and the situation to him, and I'm sure it scared the shoes off him as well. But thankfully, he was the voice of reason and made 2 very important observations. First of all, I had more than one pair of shoes. Second, he asked me if the military police had asked me to evacuate. No. Calm washed over me and my head cleared. I kicked off the extra shoe, and my children and I went into the front yard to watch the fire trucks from lawn chairs. You are loved, or I wouldn't have freaked out and drug you all into the night to keep you safe. Be flexible, and if you can't, call Andre for help. Respect for all, especially you, but be careful because panicking neighbors can throw you off your game. Laugh at everything, no matter how much it sucks. As it turned out, a squirrel had climbed into a small transformer and lost its life that night. This one small creature started a chain reaction that blew out a total of 5 out-of-date transformers. Our neighborhood remained dark for 3 days. This one small, cute, fluffy-tailed birdseed bandit engaged the U.S. Air Force military police to defend an attack on Hill Air Force Base. And never forget, most importantly of all, know where your shoes are at all times.
Just show off that bare foot. Just shake it. Everything essential was in that van. Everything. And we never know what life will bring us, when a squirrel will get into the transformers, when everything we think we know will suddenly fall into a state of chaos. But if we know what is essential, if we know what is most important, if we know what must come with us, we can guide our way through even the most difficult times. In our congregation, we must seek to know what underneath all of the busyness, all of our discernment, all of the stuff of a Sunday morning is most essential. And one of my favorite preachers, Frederick Buechner, says that when it comes to this, our congregations, with all of their budgets and their programs and their busyness, have a lot to learn, actually, from 12-step groups. He speaks of these small groups that are bent on deep sharing and personal transformation, groups like Alcoholics Anonymous, when he says, I know that these groups have no building and no official leadership. They have no rummage sales or altar guilds or every member canvas. They have no preachers, no choirs, no liturgy, no real estate. They have no creeds, they have no program. They make you wonder at times if the best thing that could happen to many a church might not be to have its building burned down and to lose all its money. Then all the people would have left is what really matters, God and each other. Now, do not get me wrong. I do not wish for fire. I do not wish to be fired, nor do I wish to talk us all out of the importance of stewardship and liturgy and astonishing choir music, such as that which we have heard this morning. All of those things are important, especially when all of those things function as manifestations of our mission in this world. Because all of it, from Sunday morning worship to Tuesday night in the board meeting and Thursday evening as students flood into this building for English as a second language classes, all of it is nothing more or less than another chance to live our values in relationship to one another and the world. We may live our values with a full choir backing us up in glorious harmony. We may live our values when one choir member goes to visit another in the hospital. We may live our values when we have everything we ever needed at our disposal. And the truth is that we may also live our values when everything goes wrong. When the siren is sounding and we have to move and only one shoe and the candles for joys and sorrows make it into the moving van, we can live our values then. We may live our values as we go forward together. And the greatest gift we can give one another is an ability to know and to say what is most important and constantly hold it before our eyes as a fresh reminder of what's coming along for the ride, no matter what, no matter where, any time we're given a choice. Frederick Buechner talks about this hypothetical fire that just could sweep through darn near every church in the world and simplify things down to the absolute necessities of the church's mission. In his words, then all the people would have left would be God and each other. The purest distillation of the mission of his church he could imagine, to be at the intersection of God and the people, to be together in the presence of the Most High. In such a congregation, the work they do is utterly focused on the will, the power, and the passion of the Holy moving within them and among them. As one of my friends who is a Christian preacher likes to point out, I don't work for the congregation. My boss is a rather distant and demanding one, she says, pointing up to the heavens. But which of us, rather theologically more complicated than your standard Christian church, could honestly say that all we need is God and each other? If something came in and swept it all away, all the trappings, the pulpit, the stained glass, the glorious music, if something came and swept all that away, but the few essential values that are core to who we are, what would be left in this room? To put it simply, who owns our congregations? Whose is this place? To what or whom do we owe our deep allegiance? Who is it? Who or what exactly is my boss? Prominent UU church consultant Dan Hodgkiss wrote a book about church governance in which he says that when it comes right down to it, our churches are owned by and accountable to one thing only, and that is their mission. The owner of the congregation, that which we are called to labor for and deploy our resources for, is our mission. Thus, our bottom line is not our balance in the bank, the shortness of our board meetings, or even the happiness of all of us gathered. Our bottom line is the degree to which we achieve our mission in this world. And by mission, I don't necessarily mean mission statement, though that's a part of it. I mean the wisdom and self-reflection that comes with knowing who we are and what we're here to do. Why do we feed the hungry? Why do we gather and sing? Why do we dance and laugh and act like goofy idiots on Saturday night and then show up here again on Sunday morning? Because our mission, not as much in words as in deeds, our mission compels us to do so. It keeps us going. It gives us meaning. It helps the work be lighter. Our mission is what guides the kitchen crew to wash the dishes. Our mission is what guides us to sing and to dance and to laugh and to pray. Which brings me to the idea of a mission statement, which I know sounds really corporate to most of us. A mission statement is, I think, an effort just to have the conversation together about who we are and about what has to make it into that van. To hear ourselves saying the words and contemplate how to live into them more fully. Over a year ago, the board of this congregation created a mission statement task force to review our current mission statement. And I would challenge any one of you to recite our mission statement word for word without cheating by looking at the pew card in the back of the pews. I cannot even do it. And as far as I can tell, I got the closest of anybody on the mission statement task force. Because, you know, I am working hard, Bruce Rommelt, to keep up. So we figured that given the fact none of us seem to know what exactly our mission statement says, it's about time to come up with a better one. And today is a part of that whole process. Brian Pace is going to be taking a similar process to this to the religious education and youth group programs. And Star Muir has graciously agreed that if you or your small group would like to dig more deeply into these ideas, he'll come and meet with you and do that work with you as well. We hope to gather some more feedback to get more ideas in this process, and it's all going to culminate in June when the board will present not just a new mission statement, but a short and easy version that even I will be able to remember that we're calling our mantra. Something so brief that we can say it to ourselves as we go about the daily, hourly, weekly, yearly tasks of congregational life. You know how on Facebook, from time to time, there are pictures that become viral and go around and with everybody that have funny captions? Well, there is a picture that's going around Facebook this week that I'm getting from all my friends that says, ministers, on the top of it. And there's a picture that says underneath it, what my friends think I do. And it has a person lounging in a hammock reading a Bible. And then there's a caption that says, "What my mom thinks I do." And it has a person sitting next to an elderly woman praying very reverently. And then there's a caption that says, "What I actually do." And there's a person in a crowded, crazy office inundated with post-it notes looking like they're going to pull their hair out. The truth is that when it comes to congregational life, no matter what we're doing, if it's lounging or worshiping or washing the dishes or pulling our hair out, if we can readily access our reasons for doing it, the task becomes so much richer and more fulfilling. If we're living out our calling together, the work of our hands is lighter and the impact of our reach is greater. If we're doing what we're called to do, our results can be nothing less than sublime. Speaking of calling, of living a particular mission, Martin Luther King said it best when he wrote, "If a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and the earth will pause to say, 'Here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well.'" Whatever our mission is, however we may choose to define it, may we live it out as Beethoven composed music or as Shakespeare wrote poetry. May we live our mission so well that all the hosts of heaven will pause and say, "Here on the corner of Church and Main lives a congregation who does their job well." May it be so, and amen.
May we go with peace on